and on ABC Radio and on your pod. This is The Good Life with me, Noel Debien. In headier moments, many an enthusiastic young Christian has considered trying the good life of a monk or a nun, certainly in years gone past. And for many Christians, yesterday was the feast of Saint Benedict, Benedict of Nursia. He's the patron saint of Europe, and you may have heard the Pope talking about him in recent years as patron saint of Europe, and that's why he took the name, of course, Benedict, as well as many other things, including spelunking, cave exploration. Benedict is often given the credit for being the founder of Western monasticism, and his idea of the good life, like the idea of Saint Augustine of Hippo before him, was to set up communities of monks and nuns. His idea was to divide up their day into periods of work and prayer. The monasteries that grew up from his ideas and from the one that he founded at Monte Cassino helped to preserve Western civilization after the collapse of the Roman Empire. There are monks and nuns who still follow his rule in Australia today.
David Orr, been a monk of St. Benedict's Monastery at Arcadia since 1966, had an opportunity to do a little bit of travelling for study, and now back full-time living with our community at Arcadia.
David, can I start by asking Benedict? This is where it all starts for a Benedictine, doesn't it?
Does it all start there?
Does it? That's a good question.
Or does it start with the community that you're living with?
How were you then attracted to that community if you hadn't heard about Benedict before? Did you just meet them, or what was the story?
I was a bit blessed. My family, for economic reasons, had to move out of Sydney and live out on the farm. And the local parish priest was Benedictine community. And then I worked on the farm on and off, just picking oranges, because that's what the monks did in those days. Then I finished school, and at the end of that I decided, well, I like the community, that they were a community. It was a cosmopolitan community, even in those days in the mid-60s, of Europeans, Germans, Australian.
So what did they tell you about Benedict then?
In the 60s, we didn't actually talk very much about Benedict. The church was a little bit more focused on other issues. And it was only later on, as I lived with the community, that you started to get a flavour for the Benedictine way of life. And then understanding Benedict himself.
What does it mean you do that characterises you as somebody who is a follower of Benedict in that community?
Always intrigued that a rule that was written in the 580, let's say, still influences what I decide to do each day of my life. That Benedict, in his wisdom, established a rule of life that just seems to have been an excellent balance and an effective way of helping to form people's lives.
And when you say rule, you mean it's a set of principles which is written out? This is what you should do during the day, or this is how you should live? Is that what it's like?
It's an actual written document in its form now of 72 chapters. And within that, Benedict does speak explicitly of how life is lived. Some of them are a little bit idiosyncratic of their time.
Sure, because it's old, yeah.
The monks must take their knives off before they go to bed at night.
So your monks do, I hope.
Oh, well, none of us have been injured during the night, so I presume that's why.
So given that it's a rule that's more than 1,500 years old, that means it's an order of life. He intended to establish communities. I, from my reading, got the impression that there are two major principles, work and prayer.
There is that experience, that phrase, ora et labora, that I think comes from the American Wimmer, the great 1800 founder in the American Benedictine way of life. Fortunately, last year I spent about 6 months on sabbatical in America, and the abbot of that community introduced another image to me, that it really is work, prayer, and lectio.
And lectio.
Lectio is the Latin word for reading, and that's a characteristic of the Benedictine way of life. The fact that we do read, and the way in which we do read, And of course, primarily, it's the reading of the scriptures.
So is that something you do personally, that you spend time, say daily even, reading and studying or reflecting on?
You do both. It's part of our structured way of life. Like, we celebrate the office in our community 5 times a day.
But it's not only reading, is it? It's about reflection as well.
It's the dynamic of how you read. Attentive listening, I think, is the expression we'd use. And if I'm educating people how to use the dynamic of lexio, yes, you do read the text out aloud. So it picks up that tradition that you actually are listening with your ear. You're actually not reading a text.
Is that something you find easy?
I find very beneficial.
But not easy?
It certainly is a discipline. And there are times when the discipline demands effort. There are other times when it's just magic. We have established cycles of readings in our lectionary, and we've got another one in the office cycle as well.
Now, you keep saying that word office, and there'll be some people out there who'll go, celebrating the office sounds like a party next to the typewriter and printer, you know what I mean? And office has a very particular meaning for a monk, doesn't it?
Yeah. In the Rule of Benedict, it's actually referred to as Opus Dei.
The work of God.
Yes, but tragically, Opus Dei conveys another agenda for many people. But in fact, Opus Dei is the work of God, where we are caught up as a community, a Christian community. We gather in the name of Christ to do God's work. And that is to give God praise, thanks. And the resources that we use are the Jewish resources of the Psalter, the Psalms.
The Psalms.
And so we have a structured prayer 5 times a day. One of Benedict's qualities of his lifestyle is that the day constantly gets interrupted with community prayer. You actually have got to stop and go and be together in prayer. Every priest would use the Roman Breviary. Now, in our community, we use a much longer one because our tradition is that we do it more often. And we just need a bit more.
So it's a Benedictine breviary, and the breviary is actually the book in which these offices are put for each one.
Yep.
When you do that, because I remember, you know, the last retreat I did was with Cistercians, who were Benedictines of the strict observance. Now, those guys, we were out of bed at, you know, 3:45 in the morning. The first office was at 4 a.m., and that went for about 20 minutes, and it was said, mercifully. And then I think they went off to read. And they thought that was an important time to read before sunrise for them.
That's the lexio tradition.
Oh, there you go. That's the old tradition. Yep. And then at 6, they came back for another one called Lourdes. And that, again, went for, I think, maybe 25 minutes. And it was sung, though. These guys all sung it. Then they had more lexio, more reading after that. And then they had a breakfast. Then at 8 o'clock, they had another one. Then 11:15, then 1:40, then 6 p.m. at 8 p.m. And there were times for work where the monks all went into the fields. This is down near Melbourne. They nearly got burnt out during the fires, actually, down because Tarawarra is just near that area.
Yep.
Is that what it's like for your particular community? Is that what your day's like?
We certainly have the same cycle of prayer together, personal prayer time, work time, and then that's the structure of the day. Our tradition, we're pretty slack.
They are called strict observance, so I presume they've upped the bar somewhat down there. Mm. Yeah.
And that will always vary with every community. That's one of the qualities of Benedictines, that not every community does it the same way.
What about music? It strikes me, you know, having heard things from Ampleforth and Downside and that English Benedictine tradition, music is incredibly woven into what they do. Is that the same for your community?
Music is woven into our prayer. One of the droughts that our community has suffered for many years is never having a musician. We had one of our community who had beautiful voice, and so he led us for about 25 years, I think. But in old age, that became incompetent. Fortunately, we've been able to pick up the resources from the Good Sams, and they've got us now to a stage where we can actually accompany our music ourselves and sing our psalms.
From my reading, I think the latest census estimates showed that there's more than 8,000 Benedictine monks like yourself worldwide. There's more than 7,000 enclosed Benedictine nuns, and there's more than 10,000 active Benedictine sisters, like the Good Samaritans in Australia and things like that. So the movement's quite large.
Yep.
Is it growing in this country?
Numerically, most of our communities in Australia are reasonably well-founded in the face of a lot of other massive crises in vocations, as we call it, for the rest of the
church. They're
stable,
as it were, number-wise.
There are people joining us.
Yeah.
And people are coming and asking us about our wisdom. I really got very surprised in the late 60s, coming out of the whole flower power world.
You remember that? You remember the 60s?
We were in the middle of it.
You can't have been there if you remember it.
We were in
the middle. You were on the farm, of course. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. But just up the road from us, a community of the Children of God.
Ah, yeah, that was a cult movement,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't then. They were trying to understand, how do Christian communities live together? And they used to come down every week to our community just for fellowship and to move through this question.
So the Children of God used to come down to the Benedictines?
Regularly. And they were asking, how do you live together? Teach us the wisdom of this man, Benedict. And then it was interesting that we lost contact with them. And they lost their spirituality.
What about silence view? Do you get a lot of that?
Within our prayer time, we have a lot of silence. Fortunately, we live in an environment that is relatively noise-free. Almost everyone who comes and stays with us just can't get over how silent the no trucks. I must admit the new
well, it's rural.
Flight patterns.
Well, semi-rural at
well,
least.
Well, the new flight patterns of Mascot have changed a lot of that.
Oh, you're getting the flights yes. overhead. Do you practice the solemn silence, as they call it?
My brother couldn't get over that on our timetable. Solemn silence. He thought that was really funny.
It is practice, though, is it? Quiet after the compline, and there's a time of quiet during the night.
Yeah, but we're not paranoid about it. If guests turn up, obviously, we've got to look after them.
You just mentioned you said it twice now. You said hospitality and you said guests. Mm. How is that part of your life at Arcadia?
It's our bread and butter. I will remember saying that in a press interview, and it was published, and this woman immediately just rang up and said, I'm in this situation, I need somewhere to go. You say you're hospitable, what are you going to do for me?
And you had her over?
Well, we had to respond to it. And Benedict is explicit about it. He takes that word of Matthew. I was hungry and you did what? I was naked and you did. That's Benedict. Each guest is to be received as Christ.
What happens in a typical month?
When we had the community at Smithfield, right in the middle of Sydney, it was daily. And that was a very different. Out of Arcadia, you're well off the highway. You're well away from everyone. So you don't get most of just the normal travelling. We've just had to demolish our old guest house and we're just rebuilding it, and hopefully August it'll be open.
So you actually do have a guest house as part of your plan?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's standard in a Benedictine monastery?
You would rarely see a Benedictine monastery that doesn't have a guest house. It'll have a library, it'll have a chapel, it'll have a dining room and a guest house.
Does farming still go on there? Is there any growing or cattle anymore?
Effectively not. We've been working for a couple of years on looking at programs of share farming or unemployment work and all of that. We got close to it a couple of years ago, but then fell apart with public risk insurance.
If a young man or young woman is talking to you and saying, you know, David, what's the practical outcome of being a Benedictine, you know, the practical side of the spirituality, how would you respond to that?
I guess it goes back to that original comment. Where does it all start from? It starts from being community. And so the practical outcome is that you're resourced to live with others and you're forced to live with others. So you've got that incredible coal face that everyone in a family has day in and day out. Monks might be able to go up and shut their door a bit longer than parents do, but the reality is when you come out, you're going to have to talk to somebody and you're going to have to be caring or service or whatever. And so the practical outcome is the skill of just living with others, which I personally believe is the whole commitment of being Christian.
David Orr, Benedictine monk from the community at Arcadia in northwestern Sydney. And that's it for The Good Life on ABC with me, Noel DeBeer.